Opening titles, droplets fall into water. Words appear under the shimmering surface. HBO Pictures. HBO Pictures presents a Stonehenge production. A river flows among rocks. Alan Alda. Peter Gallagher. Title, White Mile. Bruce Altman, Fionnuala Flanagan, Jack Gilpin, Ken Jenkins, Dakin Matthews, Don McManus, Robert Picardo, Max Wright, and Robert Loggia. Casting by David Rubin, CSA, Deborah Zane, CSA. Music by Pray for Rain, edited by John Duffy, ACE. Production designer, Mei Ling Cheng. Director of photography, Lloyd Ahern. Co-executive producers, Bob Tamarkin, Michael Hamelberg. Co-executive producer, Eileen Kahn. Produced by Anthony Santa Croce. Executive producers, Dick Berg, Alan Marcil. Written by Michael Butler. Directed by Robert Butler. White frothy waters flow past craggy rocks. Men wearing white shirts, suit trousers, and ties are scattered around a brown-walled office. A man wearing a clean sneaker puts his foot up on a chair.
Okay, so the single most compelling idea, what is it?
Comfort. They fit your feet.
No. Old people want comfort. Kids want omnipotence. You wear these, all your problems are solved. The emotion.
Well, speaking for myself personally, wearing these sneakers has solved all my problems. But how do we show that? Look, we got 4 hours till dawn. 2 hours to go home, change and shave, and we'll still have 2 hours before we present this to Dan. And we'll have the afternoon to look for new careers.
He's frustrated. He's off his rhythm. And the other players aren't that hard to beat.
In his mind, they turn into nuns, schoolgirls with uniforms.
He's having a really bad day.
Then he remembers his Adidas. He puts them on during a timeout.
Suddenly, he's up against gigantic guys. He's flying through the air. He's dunking shots.
Then the tagline, Adidas. They give you that extra lift. What do you think?
Basketball players turn into nuns.
Oh, I know, it's terrible. Forget it. We haven't slept.
You do that with a dissolve?
A dissolve? A cut? It's fantasy.
We have Danny Manning, or maybe we have Danny Manning.
Yes.
Maybe.
We'll know tomorrow.
The client is going to want a specific shot that says comfort.
Oh, Danny Manning puts on his Adidas, and then we see this incredible look of comfort flooding his face.
No, there.
Right. Boom. Obvious.
A portly man takes off his glasses.
I don't want to offend Catholics.
The nuns are going to be treated with absolute respect.
People are going to have great recall on this. Danny Manning and the nuns.
And the nuns.
The portly man glances around the boardroom, then turns to face the window. A younger man with dark hair and his colleagues watch as the portly man rises from his chair.
I don't like celebrity endorsements. How do I know he won't do something in his private life to hurt the product?
Andy, this is a man of the utmost integrity. I recommend we go with him.
Andy puts on his glasses and looks at artwork on the table depicting a white nun slam dunking a basketball. A black man stands in the background.
How would the nun part work?
Filming an Adidas commercial in a studio, nuns play basketball. Danny Manning plays among them.
Watch the pace! Watch the pace! Come on! Oh, yeah, three down, got it!
What did Thornell say exactly?
He said the commercial is better than it was before.
Those are his exact words?
He said it's better now, yeah.
Because if those were his exact words, we're fucked. He hates it.
The advertising agency boss strolls across the smoky studio. He approaches the dark-haired man.
How is it?
I don't think the client is happy.
Okay, good rehearsal!
I have this feeling he's putting us in review.
Oh, yeah?
It's a $20 million account. He is not putting us in review. I'm going to show this tape to the guys at the meeting tomorrow. You're going to see sheer terror on those faces.
What is it?
It's our next trip. Just came in from the Canadian guide.
Yeah, it looks great.
It's great. The boat's bouncing all over the place. The guy nearly loses the camera. I'm going to shit.
You don't want to ever go to, like, Kauai?
Kauai?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, that's great. We could really test ourselves negotiating our way through the lobby. Andy.
Don't believe me, Andy. We'll take care of it.
Okay.
How we doing?
Okay. These two young guys work very hard on this.
Do you think we have a problem?
You know what it is. I feel like there's this big hole where Nick Karras used to be.
Let me tell you something. Art Stefanoff and David Koenig are two of the brightest young guys we've got. Otherwise, I wouldn't have given them Nick's accounts.
Nick was a friend. It wasn't easy for me to hear he was off my account.
Andy, he retired.
Yeah, I know.
Andy, we miss Nick a lot. But he's moved on. And we have to move on, too. You know what I mean.
Well, I think I understand all this pretty well, Jack. I mean, as I recall, Nick hired you, didn't he?
Yes, he did.
I seem to remember that.
Andy, let me get you together with them, all right? These are very bright guys.
Sure.
And if you're not happy, then we'll work something out, okay? Is that fair?
Nothing make me happier.
Nothing would make him happy. You know what that means? Review.
Who are you calling?
Nick Karras. I need some advice.
Kill the nuns. Right. Kill the nuns. Just make them nervous. It's too far out. Playing ordinary basketball players, guys. And kill the schoolgirls, too. Anytime.
Spraying flowers in a sunny garden, Nick hands the phone to a woman.
Hello? Yes, one second, please.
It's Thornell. I love how retired you are.
Hi, Andy. Yeah? No, I think you're right. Yeah, kill them. I mean, the main thing is the shoes. If you were selling nuns, it would be a different story. It's all right. I'm glad to be of help, Andy.
Okay, thank you. Thank you,
ladies.
Claire,
you did a wonderful job, all right? Thank you. Give you a
I hope that appeases him. This is not a happy guy, Dan.
He is not fucking dropping us. He's our client. He goes when I tell him he can. Let's put him on the list for the Canada trip.
Do you think he'll go?
Yeah, he'll go. You know what? Let's put Nick Karras on the list, too.
You don't have a problem with Karras?
No, I wouldn't have a problem with him. You invite Thornell. I'll call Karras. I can't wait to see those faces.
This is where some of us are going next month.
Imagine the thrill.
It's an hour's flight north of Vancouver. It's called the Chilco River. And this, right here, that's known as the White Mile.
Holy shit.
When I got this job, I was charged with doubling our billings in 4 years. We did better than that. We went from 153 million to 400 million. And I had a great time doing it. This is fun for me. If you're not having fun, you shouldn't be here. You know what I'm hearing now? I'm starting to hear fear. Fear of losing your talent, losing your clients. What did he say? How did he say it? You start working from the fear of losing, you lose. This is not going to happen, guys. Why do you think we take these trips? Anybody have any idea? Marty, why are we going on this trip?
Well, frankly, Dan, I think these trips are one of the best things you've done for this company. After we've slept out on the ground with them and cooked the fish we've caught together, they're not just clients anymore, they're like family.
Yeah, so in other words, it's a way of cementing relations. Yeah, well, that happens.
Dan strolls around the room.
What's it really about?
Dan glances around at his staff and raises his eyebrows.
You don't really know, do you?
He stops walking and passes his gaze across the room.
This trip is to get your balls back. The stakes are very high in this business. When they're this high, what do you think makes the difference? Hard work? Everybody works hard. No. You know who wins? The guy who can walk up to you in the schoolyard, look you right in the eye, and say, I want your lunch.
He continues to pace around the room.
You gotta be able to go into the wilderness with nothing but a knife and a little nerve and come out not just having survived it, you come out owning it. You want to keep this client? You take him by the throat, you hold him to your chest until you can feel his heart beating. And you say, you're mine, pal. From now on, you don't want what you want. You want what I want.
Dan stares at his team through round tortoise-shell glasses.
That's what this trip is about.
Dan smiles, turns, and leaves. David.
Jesus, this guy's a pisser.
So who's he taking on that river? You, David, and me.
I haven't been here that long. You think I actually need to get my balls back?
I'm a little nervous. Don't worry. You'll do fine. He couldn't be happier with David's work. Just relax. Dan, this is Diane Koenig.
Hi, I'm Dan Cutler.
Hi, it's nice to meet you. We'll get together. Art and I and you and David. Great, I'd like that.
Thanks, Michelle. Come on in. Can I offer you anything? A cup of coffee, a Perrier?
No, I'm fine, thanks.
Here, have a seat over.
Diane follows Dan into an office. She wears a tailored beige skirt suit.
Is anything wrong, Mr. Cutler?
Oh, no. I should have had Michelle explain. No, I just like to meet with the spouse of anybody new here.
I see.
You know, so we can get to know one another. It's a big adjustment, you know, new city, new friends. And there are a lot of pressures in this business, too. I know David had to work all through the night a few times in this Adidas thing. It can get to you sometimes.
Well, David likes to work hard.
Oh, David's terrific. We're all crazy about him here. I just want to make sure you're happy, too. I mean, you guys are a team, you know? So how are you coming with the house hunting?
Well, we found a place that we like, and we're just about ready to close.
Can I help on that? I'm a pretty good negotiator.
Well, if we have a problem.
What about you? What are your plans? I know you were teaching back east.
Mm-hmm. Well, I thought that once we got settled, I'd look around.
You know what? My wife plays bridge with a couple of people on the school board. I'm going to have her call you just to get acquainted, okay?
Well, thanks. That's very nice.
Anything we can do to help, really. I mean, glad you came in. Thanks. Nice to meet you.
You too.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Diane leaves as Dan picks up the phone.
Michelle? Yeah, well, she's a tough cookie. Well, if he starts complaining about the hours or the working conditions... Yeah, right, it'll be coming from her. Well, hold it. What?
I just spoke to Thornell. He'd love to come on the Chilco trip.
Good. Carrie's is all set, too. We still have that release form from that trip we took a couple of years ago. Boy, I need a bunch of copies. Legal ones.
All right, let me look.
Michelle? No, she'll be all right. Just keep your eye on her, all right? Right.
The trips are led by experienced rafting guides who have seasons of experience. Miller Tours Incorporated. Conditioning and safety are top priority.
So we have to decide.
No.
Diane strides into the team's office.
That's good. Tiny company.
Actors that we want.
No, they also have to.
I want to say bye.
Hi.
Hi, Diane.
Hi, Jack.
How'd it go with Dan?
Sort of weird, but basically fine.
Oh, good. Do you have an hour for me, Angel? Could you pick up a sleeping bag at this place on Ventura?
Yeah, sure. Hey, you need a place to crash? You know, we just bought a whole house.
No, it's for me.
But thank you.
Dan's taking some of us to Canada next month. Kind of an outdoor get-together with some of our clients.
Mm-hmm. You outdoors. No way.
It's corporate bonding. Stuff like that.
You're gonna catch pneumonia. You'll get lost.
I gotta go. It's part of the deal.
Snake bite is. Are you going on this trip?
Oh, I've been here too long. It seems sane to me. Wouldn't it be nice if the job was just this?
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye, Jack.
Love you.
A stretch limo pulls up outside a large house. Jack gets out of the car. Nick Karras's wife steps out of the house.
He's just tying one last fly. I'll get him.
Great.
Inside the house, she gives Nick a wrapped gift.
I don't want you to open this until you are wading in a river, all right? It's a surprise.
A surprise? What is it?
A little something for your trip. But you got to promise to use it.
What did you get me?
I'm not telling you.
Socks?
Not saying.
Extra warm electric socks?
Uh-uh.
Condoms?
Oh, you wish.
Electric condoms?
I have to tell you, you are getting real cold.
Hey. You're not upset because I'm leaving, are you?
Oh, please. I've got plenty to do while you're gone.
They've got steelhead trout. I've always wanted to go up there.
No, really? You carry pictures of fish in your wallet. You think normal men do that?
I only carry pictures of you, babe.
Oh, yeah? Holding a fish. Hey, Jack. I don't see too much of you anymore.
I know. We gotta do something about that. Let's have dinner when we get back.
Now, you be sure to put that in your book now. Hmm?
That's a promise.
Oh, promises, promises.
I didn't know you fished.
Well. Just try not to get the hooks caught in your pants, Jack.
What do you say,
Hey! How you doing,
Dan?
He's gonna meet us in Vancouver. He and David are taking a different route.
David Koning is in my co-replacement.
He's a good guy, Nick.
That's nice. What's the drill?
Chilco Lake by charter, 2 days R&R, then home.
See you in a couple of days, babe.
So who's going with us?
Well, Dave Koning and Dan, of course.
Uh-huh. Who else?
Pete Wiederhorn.
Oh, yeah. Big Dog and Merrill Lynch, right?
Right, right. And Jerry Taggart, CG&L, you know him.
Yeah, we had a good time at the last trip. Who else?
Tom Horton from Wells Ridge.
A little superior, but not a bad guy.
And Andy Thornell.
And my assignment, should I accept it, is to crawl in Andy's sleeping bag at night. Right?
Exactly. You know, I think there's a good chance we're going to have a great time up here.
I hope for nothing. I fear nothing. I am free.
How's that?
Fellow Greek, writer. That was his philosophy. His epitaph, too.
Hey, David.
Hey.
Man, hello to your predecessor.
This is Nick Harris.
Hi, Nick. I'm David Koenig. I've heard a lot about you. A lot of beautiful things.
Hello,
it's
David.
Good to meet you.
Nice to meet you.
Thanks.
Jack, you want to hand out the release forms?
I got them.
You can
Andy?
Get your stuff.
Release form?
Yep.
Here. Jerry, take a look.
David,
what is this? In case we lose our credit cards?
Pete?
Nick?
All right.
Hey, Dan?
Yeah.
Release from what?
It's a lawyer thing. Just sign it and we can get out of here. No, the legal department asked for it. Don't worry.
Look them over. I'll collect them later.
Look, he's not here yet. Branson, he should be here any minute.
Did Dan say anything about rafting when he invited you?
Rafting, yeah.
All right. Yeah. Let's get this stuff going.
Whoa, look who's here.
Bill Spencer.
I don't believe it.
An hour out of Cleveland, I realized I haven't packed my gear. Thank God there was a sports store just down the road.
Oh, I'm glad you made it. Here's a release.
$1.5 million in his budget, and the guy leaves home without his fishing tackle.
Shoka Lodge Group?
Yeah, it's us. Come on.
Oh, man. What accommodations. Welcome aboard.
Are there phones where we're going?
It's me. What's the plan, Dan? Are we sleeping out tonight?
No, we're staying at the lodge. Tomorrow we have a choice of fishing or floating. Saturday, everybody floats. Go down through Lava Canyon. We'll meet the plane there. We'll come back here.
We all float on Saturday?
Well, we're all on this rafting trip here. I presume we're all floating. Yeah. Any more questions?
Yeah. Did you have the plane stop at 45th Street?
You plan to float the Chilco? That's white water, isn't it?
Yeah.
Have you got a guide? A guy who knows the river?
Yes, I do. Yeah. He's only rafted this river 200 times, so we may have to take a cab part of the way. But yes, it did occur to me to get a guide. Yeah.
They climb onto a small plane called Icarus. Now the plane flies over a pine forest. Snow-capped mountains rise in the distance. Now the plane comes into land on a runway marked with the number 16. The plane's wheels make contact with the tarmac. Later, a car pulls up behind another vehicle on a rural road surrounded by trees. The group exit the vehicles and carry their luggage up a bank towards a lodge.
Wait, I got something to call my mother. I got two questions. When do we eat? Who's cooking?
Not us.
Yeah.
We got a couple of young women, you know, a couple of guys. They're great cooks.
Really great.
All right.
Now Nick Karras strolls out onto the patio of the lodge. He walks past a row of chairs under the golden glow of lanterns hanging from the roof. He has a stocky frame and is balding. He gazes out as a small plane circles over the trees in the blue sky. With a furrowed brow, he watches the plane fly away. Inside, some men play pool and others play darts.
Ralph smokes up.
Now I'm at 30. Oh, that's
cool. What are we? We're the big ones or the little ones?
We're solids. Who's playing this game?
The little ones.
So, you do it on top of the oven for how long? This is nice.
Just until you get them brown, and then you put them in the oven.
Yeah, but please, stuff Jerry.
And then make a white wine reduction.
Outside the
this is the wrong guy to ask.
The wrong guy to ask about.
No, I'm absolutely the right guy to ask.
I don't mean wrong in any kind of
in a pejorative way.
Come on.
He's a wrong guy. Yeah.
Dan leans against the door frame, watching the men.
What do we have to do here? Jack?
Outside, the sky is inky black and soft lights shine at the windows of the lodge. The next day, the foamy water of the river flows past rocks. The morning sunlight catches in a cloud of spray rising from the water. Jack walks out onto the patio, drinking from a mug, then puts it down on the side. He peers over the balcony. Below, a blond man unloads a pickup truck near a minibus loaded with an inflatable raft.
Ed, hi.
Good morning, Mr. Cutler.
Is there a boat here?
Well, we've got a couple we can chase around.
Are you ready? Or I thought we were going to be going a little sooner.
Somebody's in your boat?
Today, half a dozen. Tomorrow, everybody goes. 10 of us.
Well, today, if you've got six, I've got a couple of German tourists who want to go down. We can put them all in one boat.
Wait a minute. You want to mix tourists in with my guys? Why can't the tourists have their own raft?
Well, I suppose they could, but usually...
No, let me explain something to you. Just listen to this.
Jack watches Dan and Ed talking below. He steps down from the patio and paces down the bank towards them.
Yeah, okay, good. I mean, are you ready? I thought we were going to be going a little sooner than this.
No, just be a few more minutes.
A sign on the pickup reads, Miller Tours.
Do we have an understanding about this group? Other trips?
Jack stands nearby listening to their conversation.
Yeah.
Dan paces over toward Jack.
Okay, we're all set. Let's get the guys out of here who are rafting today. What about Karras?
He doesn't want to float. He wants to fish today.
Okay, and I think you want to fish today, too.
Right.
I want to get going as soon as Miller gets his stuff together. Whenever the hell that's going to be.
Dan paces off and Jack glances at Ed Miller. Now under a cloudy sky, a light mist hangs over the river amid tall, slim trees on each bank. The wheel of the minibus spins in mud. Dan and the others climb out of the minibus. A woman inspects the back wheel.
About as a step.
What we've got here is your basic mud puddle.
Dan watches as Miller takes a winch from the back of his pickup.
What are you doing? Wait a minute, what's that?
Come on. Put around that trio there, we'll be out of here in a couple minutes.
Forget that stuff. I'll take care of it. Put it away. All right, David.
Present.
Get some of those dead branches over there. Stick them under the wheel.
I can do. Okay, look.
Pete, weed a horn.
It's you.
See if you can find some sand or gravel or something. Stick it in the mud there.
You got it, pal.
What's that sand going to do for that mud?
I don't know. It's going to do a hell of a lot for a weed a horn.
No, rocks. That's right.
You get some rocks. Pete! Come on, branches. Let's go.
Let's go. Hey, you go over here. I'm
going to go down here. Miller smirks at the men as he refastens the tarpaulin on the back of his pickup truck. Meanwhile, David pads through the woods carrying an armful of sticks. He bends down to grab more sticks from the ground. Glancing up, the rushing water catches his eye. David stands and stares through his round gold glasses at the gushing water. He lays the pile of sticks on the ground and scrambles down the bank. He slows to a stop and stares at the river below him. White frothy water surges through a gap between jagged rocks. David's breath becomes shallow and his brow furrows. He turns and climbs the bank. Meanwhile, the others surround the minibus.
No, no, come on, everybody together, all right?
All right.
Okay, two, three.
The back wheel rises from the rut in the mud. The men double high-five each other, and Dan grins. Now, David appears with his armful of sticks. David throws the sticks to one side. Now, Jack and Nick fish in a quiet part of the river. Jack reels his line in. Nick dodges Jack's rod. The two sit in a small rowboat.
Nick, you think this kind of fishing is ever really going to catch on in a big way?
There's about a million people in the country who think so.
I got it.
The fish is going to reel you in unless you get that attached properly.
Well, I got it. Here, I just got it a little turned around. I gotta get the touch you have with this thing.
I just have to do it a lot, that's all. Sometimes when Jenna watches me pack, she sees the fly rod go in, she starts pounding her head like this, you know. Well, that reminds me. I promised I'd use her gift out here. Let's see what we got.
Hey.
All right. A thing of beauty. Who needs to fish with a hat like this?
It's you.
Yeah? Forget it. She kills me.
Nick Karras takes off the blue cap with a fake fish appearing to stick through the top. He switches back to his beige bucket hat.
You miss the day-to-day stuff?
Nick glances at Jack and shrugs as he prepares a fly.
I know you were very close to Thornell. You really think he might pull the account?
You think maybe I should talk to him?
You know, that would be a great idea.
Jack, I don't want to embarrass you, but you're positioning me, aren't you?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Nick rubs his hands together and shakes his head.
You know what I've learned going from river to river? Sometimes the fish are where you think they are. And sometimes they're where they're not supposed to be. So you have to sort of develop your own instinct, your own style. Otherwise, you'll always be where the fish are not.
Nick smiles at Jack and shakes his head. Jack glances at Nick, then lowers his gaze.
I'll give you the book on Thornell.
Nick pats Jack.
He's a decent guy. He's honest. And if you try to pressure him, he'll walk.
Nick squints in the sunlight. Jack locks eyes with Nick and nods, then looks down. Later, at the lodge, Tom smokes a cigar and talks to Jack. Others stroll around.
You know, we were meant to live in the wilderness. Our bodies crave fresh air.
Tom, stop.
Food
I'll be crying
caught
in a minute.
With your own hands.
You are taking up the wilderness with that.
Sleeping
cigar.
Under the sky.
I was not meant to live in the wilderness.
Face. You know, they did a study that says that sleeping under the sky with a book over your face can actually help your immune system.
Put a book up your ass. I'm trying to rest here.
Several of the group enter the lodge. Andy spins on his chair.
Oh, look who's here, the Royal Canadian Navy. How many made it? One, two, three, four, five.
That's the idea.
How was the river?
Oh, forget the river. The drive back was a killer. Half my spine is up in my skull.
Class five rapids in the river. Class
great.
Six bumps in the road.
Wonderful. You should see this girl with an oar.
No. Don't worry, you get me on the water. Tomorrow I fish. Today I slept.
No, tomorrow you got to come with us.
I told them.
Oh, yeah, you got it.
Yes? Do you know what this class five and class six stuff is? And what it means? Because...
River talk. Yeah.
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 Now, as far as I'm concerned, Nick, you have to go a long way before you beat the classics. Here. Take a look at this. Now, this is a classic.
Yeah.
you're talking classic, take a look at this. The Royal Coachman.
Oh, yeah. Oh, that's the one you were telling me about.
Beautiful. This dry fly has caught more trout than any dry fly in the history of fishing.
Well, it looks like it, yeah. Yeah, now, compare this, Jack, to the kind of thing that's going on today.
Well, I bet the fish can spot that a mile away.
Yes, they can. They can spot it a mile away because it's all tinsel and flash.
Fish like that?
Las Vegas fish like that.
It happens every time I get a party.
Nick, you made that?
That I did.
There's no justice. Who gets justice? People get what they can pay for.
Well, that's a pretty broad statement.
No, I studied this in college.
They told you in college there's no justice? What college did you go to?
Maybe I can help out here.
Please.
Yeah. This is what we were talking about before. I was trying to explain, and I think that justice is relevant.
Dan's smile fades as he surveys the group through his round tortoiseshell glasses. Early the next morning, pale gray light reflects off the river between the silhouetted trunks and branches of trees on the bank. On the adjacent road, the headlamps of two vehicles approach in the dark. Miller's pickup truck and the minibus with the boat on the roof ride over the bumpy track and splash through a dark puddle. They slow down and park up. Dan climbs out of the minibus into the dusky light.
Okay, let's go. Spencer, wake up Wiederhorn. Tell him he's having the time of his life. Spencer.
Spencer's asleep.
No, give them both a shot. David, leave your stuff here. You won't need anything this night on the boat.
Come on. Dan, what's the deal here?
What's the deal? We're going rafting. That's what we came up here for.
Because I could happily hang around the lodge and fish all day today.
You came all this way to hang around the lodge? Nick, let's go. Little hustle. Set an example for the younger ones. What? That was a joke.
Yeah, was it?
What, you a little cranky till you get your Ovaltine in the morning?
Are you needling me?
No, I'm not needling
you. Yes, you are.
No.
Why do you do that? Do you enjoy that?
Tell you what, let's get in the boat. We can do group therapy on the way home.
Now, let's be straight with each other for a minute. Why don't you let up, Dan? I'm not a threat to you. Relax.
You know, I always admired how relaxed you were. You had perspective. You had distance. I guess I'd rather stay in the game.
You know, if you want to play games, first find out if anybody wants to play.
What is your problem today?
Come on. You guys up? I'm up for this. Let's go.
Okay. I got it.
They carry the raft down to the water's edge. Miller wears a blue headband.
Come on.
Okay, everybody. For those of you who didn't go down the river with us yesterday, this is a Sotar inflatable raft. It's got a couple of very important features, one of which is that it's a paddle boat. Mm-hmm. But you, all of you, are the power behind the boat. And we'll be needing that power in order to avoid obstacles as we head on down the river.
You mean we're all going to get into that?
We won't all fit in there.
I'll have a paddle, too.
The group put on life jackets.
Steering and ruddering as we head on down the river. Also be yelling different commands. Forward, paddle, Dan. Right turn, left turn, stop. Also be using my paddle.
You think one boat's enough?
Usually they use two rafts for a group this size. Probably not important. If we had to have two, we would have brought two. Let's just make the best of it.
Okay, everybody, go ahead and put on your life jackets, cinch them up tight, and come on down.
What do you say about weight distribution?
I don't think he said anything about it.
Okay, I'll be right back.
We're going to be all over there.
Can you explain this class thing to me? Like, what is class three?
Class three is what we did yesterday.
Right.
It's how they rate the rapids on a scale of 1 to 6. Today we'll be hitting class four and class five.
All right, so what is class six?
Class six is basically unnavigable.
David nods.
Okay, boys.
He glances down, then follows the others to the water's edge. Dan is the first to climb on board. He glances down at the floor of the raft. David shares a look with Nick.
Hey,
You know, I don't want to do this.
You don't want to do it, say no.
Well, how rough is it?
I don't know what the hell's going on out there any more than you do.
Nick smiles at David, who gazes down at the water. Dan looks back at them with a downturned mouth.
I'll be okay.
David smiles, nods at Dan, and walks down the bank to join the others. Nick is the last to walk down toward the raft.
Okay, 5, 6, 7, 8. Let's go.
Okay, let's go forward.
We come in peace.
It was good.
Okay. Even cadence. Okay, we're going to practice a few of our strokes. When I say left turn, the left side back paddles, the right side goes forward. Okay, left turn. Dig it in, left turn. Looking good?
What, do we just copy the person in front of us?
Exactly. Okay, right turn.
Right turn.
Right side back paddle.
Okay. Will there be cocktails on this flight?
Okay, left turn.
Left turn.
Ryan,
you got a whole new career here.
Yeah, I think I've got a hernia.
You guys right turn. And left turn.
Hey, that was
shopping right off the whole again.
And left turn. Left
turn. Under Miller's supervision, the group practices rowing in the heavily laden raft.
Rapid.
Let's go, engines!
As they approach the rapids, David's expression is tense.
Ramming speed, buddy. Yeah, I'm going for a nap.
Okay, easy forward now, straight on down.
Good luck to us all. Don't give up the ship.
Left turn. Stop. Oh!
Right turn.
Right turn.
And forward.
They row forward through the rapids. Several of them grin as the raft bumps over the choppy water. They pass through to a calmer stretch of water.
Okay, let's go forward again. Easy strokes. Looking good. Great.
Who was it that recommended the eggs better than?
They row along the river. Sunshine glistens on the wet rocks. They approach a point in the river where a sheer sheet of water drops over a ridge. Dropping over the ridge, the raft speeds along in the foamy water.
Okay, I broke a sweat.
All right, what we just went through is where the Bidwell Rapids start. Class 4 with some class 5. Okay, that's it.
The river is wide, frothy, and fast flowing. Grinning, the group paddle their way through the rapids. They approach another drop, and the raft hurtles over it. Jack glances back at David.
It's fabulous.
They speed over another drop. David grabs his cap and plants it firmly onto his head.
Welcome along, companion gentlemen. Looking good.
They reach another fast section that weaves past a large rock.
Here comes a rock! Okay, paddle! High side, high side!
They navigate down past the rock.
Here comes the white mile!
Oh, great!
Need to really focus in here!
The raft crashes through the rapids and a shower of frothy water falls onto them.
Right turn! Right turn!
They paddle themselves free of the rocks and surge down further bends in the river. They navigate between steep rock faces on either side of the rapids. Crashes up against a large rock and upturns. One by one, the men fly off the raft. Bubbles rise under the surface and the men struggle in the frothy water. A hand tries to grab the raft. The empty raft twists and turns through the rapids. Some of the men cling to its side. Others are carried downriver at full speed. Dan struggles to keep his head above the water. Miller wades through the river, steadying himself with his arms. He glances around. Jack grabs the side of the raft and pulls himself up. He sees one of the other men floating past on his back. Jack pulls himself into the raft. Jack grabs a paddle. Jack grabs hold of Thornhill. Miller swims through the water. He pushes off a rock and continues to swim through the rapids. He swims to the side and clambers up onto rocks. Miller stands and looks up and down the river. Cupping his mouth, Miller yells at David, who struggles in the water.
Help! 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 Come to shore! Come on! Help! Help!
The river carries David past Miller. Miller pulls off his life jacket and runs away from the river. Jack paddles the raft down the rapids with Andy clinging to the side. Jack pulls Andy into the raft.
Okay, come on. Okay, I got you. Okay. I'll get you warm. I'll get you warm. Get this open. Cold.
Calm.
It's okay. Keep talking. Keep talking to me. Calm. Keep talking to me. Come on. Hold me. Hold me. Come on.
While Jack holds Andy, Miller runs along a path by the river. A gray-haired man floats rapidly down the river. Miller runs through the woods. two men flail in the rapids. Miller reaches men and women gathered around the vehicles.
Hey! I need the raft!
What?
We hit a rock. Everybody went in. Oh, I've got to go back up and refloat the canyon. You've got to go over to Lexus Creek. Get some help back.
The van's been over.
I'll get a ride with them.
Call a rescue!
Miller jumps into the pickup and drives off, towing another raft. The others get into a camper van and a Jeep. Meanwhile, Dan swims to the riverbank and pulls himself up onto rocks. Once on the rocks, Dan looks back at the river and sees a man struggling.
Nick! Take my hand! Take my hand! Nick! Can you see me? Take my hand!
Dan reaches out his hand. It's Nick. He floats closer. Nick grabs Dan's hand. Nick's face is bloodied. Both men strain to hold onto each other. Nick looks up at Dan, who clings to a piece of foliage. The foliage snaps and they both fall into the river. They zoom down the rapids with their arms flailing. Now, Miller paddles a new raft downstream. He navigates the rough water. A helicopter flies through the valley over the river.
Chopper 3, this is base. What is your position? Over. This is Chopper 3. We're proceeding along the river. No sign of anyone yet. The second chopper up. Over. Chopper 3, this is base. Chopper 4 is on the way. ETA 10 minutes. Over.
Drenched, Jack and Andy climb the bank.
Where's the road?
What road?
Miller said there was a road south side of the river.
This is the north side.
Jack pushes his wet hair away from his face. Andy follows him up the bank. Meanwhile, Miller paddles along the river in the new raft. Clutching a tree trunk, Jerry waves at Miller. Jerry climbs up onto a tree trunk.
Over here! Is there anyone else?
Jerry slips and clings to the wet tree trunk. He waves at Miller.
Come here!
Have you seen the others?
Miller rows over to Jerry.
Come on, Mr. Packard. It's gonna be all right.
I can't get over there.
It's going to be all right, Jerry. It's going to be all right. Go ahead, climb in the boat.
I can't get over
there. Come on. Come on now. You can do it. Let's get to the boat. That's it. Here it goes.
Jerry slumps into the new raft, and Miller paddles downstream. They shoot through another steep section of the rapids, bouncing over rocks. Jerry grits his teeth. Miller uses both paddles to steady the raft through the frothy water.
Look, over there, look.
Jerry spots Dan on some rocks ahead.
Keep going!
From the rocks, Dan waves his arms to usher them past. Looking drenched and dazed, Dan climbs onto the raft.
Wasting time, goddammit.
Miller uses his paddles to guide the raft away from the rocks and back into the flow of the river. Meanwhile, Jack leads Andy through tall shrubs and trees.
Watch yourself.
Yeah, I'm all right. Any idea where we are?
We gotta keep moving.
Jack, Andy, and Pete look up.
Let's go, let's go.
Miller paddles the raft through an intense stretch of rapids. Splashed by water, Dan glances around. The raft shoots around a corner. A helicopter flies over trees. On the river, Jerry points to a figure pressed against protruding shrubs. The raft approaches the figure. Jerry, Miller, and Dan stare.
Oh my God.
Miller paddles toward the inert figure. Water gently laps around the body.
Can you see? Who is it?
Jerry climbs off the raft onto the small island of shrubs. The figure faces away from them. He wades over to the body.
It's Spencer. Come and help me.
No, no. Leave him here.
Why?
We take the time now, they'll all be dead. Get in the boat. Come on, get in the boat.
Jerry wades back toward the raft. Miller glances at Dan.
Maybe he had a bad heart.
A bad heart?
Well, what was it? What happened? These rapids had me for almost an hour. I'm 55. Telling me a younger man wouldn't have made it if he was healthy? God, everybody knows how to swim.
Chilco's not a swimming hole.
Just row the fucking boat.
Jerry climbs into the boat. Miller rows with the flow of the river as Dan glances at dead Bill Spencer. The chopper flies low over the river. The chopper lands near parked vehicles and people.
We got a bruise here! Maybe some broken ribs! Some hypothermia!
What about the others? How many of you got? They didn't all make it, sir! They didn't all make it!
I gotta get the bag! Heaven! I gotta get the bag!
Jack stumbles toward the Miller Tours minibus. He opens the back door and looks at the labels of various bags. The paramedic examines bare-chested Peter from the back of an ambulance.
Looks like you've got some broken ribs. Your lungs sound clear. They don't seem to be punctured.
Pete, Andy, I got your bags. Why don't you guys go on ahead, huh?
The paramedic tends to Peter. Jack looks up at the sky. A rope with a stretcher hangs from the chopper. On the shoreline, men strap a body bag to a stretcher and signal up to the chopper above. Dan, Miller, and Jerry approach on the raft. Dan spots the body bags on the shore. As the raft passes the rescuers, Dan stares at a body bag. One of the rescue divers guides another body bag up toward the chopper. Dan watches from the raft. His wet gray hair sticks to his forehead. His jaw trembles and his brow furrows. They continue to row down the river. From the bank, Jack and two women watch as the raft approaches. Jack huddles in a jacket. Three paramedics watch from the shore as Miller rows towards the bank. Jerry lies low in the raft and grips hold of the ropes. The paramedics reach toward him as the raft approaches them.
You okay?
You okay?
Did you see anybody?
All right.
The paramedics help Dan out of the boat. He stumbles in the water. Jack appears.
Hey, Dan. Wiederhorn and Thorne, now they're here. They're okay. Did you see Art? Or David? Dan? Did you see Nick? Dan, what about the others? Did you see anybody?
Sir, need you to stand back and just give us some room, all right? Just relax a bit. We'll get you to the hospital at Williams Lake.
I had Karis in my hands. Just looking at his face, you know? I see his eye. Then they just lost him. River just took him away. Goddamn rock. Fucking rock. Shit!
The paramedics put a blanket over Dan and help him into the ambulance. Jack stares as a paramedic closes the back door. Later, a man in a white coat leads Jack into a room.
Inspector Costello, I'm sorry, but we need for you to identify the bodies of these five gentlemen.
Okay.
Did you and your friends have any rafting experience?
Some of us did. That's David Koenig.
Did anyone instruct you in how to handle yourselves in the rapids on this trip?
Not much. It was Horton. Tom Horton. But there was some instruction.
Well, the Chilco's a pretty powerful river.
Jack looks under a sheet at another body.
It's Art Stefanoff. Bill Spencer.
11 men. That's a lot to have in one raft.
With a pale, sweating face, Jack looks at another body. He glances up, then back to the body.
Nick Karis.
Now, nurses push Dan in a wheelchair through double doors and out of the emergency section into a ward. Jack catches up with him.
Is your knee hurting, Dan?
No, it's fine. How are you? You ought to ask him to give you a pill.
You want me to make the calls to the families?
No, I'll call them. You go back home. Make sure people don't fall apart. You know, there's a lesson here.
Dan wheels his chair alongside a hospital bed and lifts himself onto the side of the bed.
I didn't motivate them enough. I just built a fire under them. We wouldn't be here now. I let myself down, you know?
Dan frowns. Jack stares at him with wide eyes.
You were great out there, Jack. You ought to be proud of yourself.
A nurse pulls a curtain around Dan's cubicle. Jack sees flashbacks of Dan in a suit.
Why? Yeah, that's great. We could really test ourselves, negotiating our way through the lobby. I can't wait to see those faces.
Jack's eyes gaze off to the side. He looks at the dead bodies covered with sheets. His mouth drops open. A series of memories of each of the dead men flash before him. With a cigar in his mouth, David turns and looks forward. Art and Tom smile. Bill Spencer walks away from a taxicab holding a fishing net and bag. Light flashes on Jack's face as he remembers these moments. From the fishing boat, Nick Karras' face smiles at Jack and he winks. Back in the hospital, Jack stares at the dead bodies lying under the sheets. Dan arrives at the office, limping out of the elevator with a cane.
Welcome back, Chief. It's good to see you.
Yes, we've missed you.
People turn to stare as he walks. His secretary appears by his side.
Good morning.
Hi, Al.
Didn't realize you'd be on a cane. Were you badly hurt?
No. A couple of weeks, I'll be fine. Anything I should know?
Marty wants to see you when you have time for him.
No, tell him to come in.
And Diane Koenig is in the building to pick up a check. She asked if she could see you on her way out. Thought you'd want to see her.
Yeah, I'll be okay.
Set up lunch for you at your desk.
You got me that cheesecake.
Welcome home.
Thanks.
Marty, he can see you now.
I thought I'd wait until you got back to work before I hit you with it.
I have to tell you, Marty, I find this hard to believe. Who filed the suit?
The company is being sued by Jenna Karas. Now, you're not a defendant, but they are holding the corporation responsible for your actions. And Ed Miller's.
Jenna Karas.
He looks down and shakes his head.
She has no case. Nick signed that release. Everybody did.
Well, there are problems with the release. The wording was pretty vague. It should have been issued before the trip. It's probably invalid.
That's great. I saw Nick's face this close to me, seconds before he drowned.
Marty blinks and then looks down.
I can still see his eyes. Gotta give him my life to save him.
Dan, I know you know this, but you can't let this get to you personally.
Dan shakes his head and gets up from his chair.
Look, I understand her bitterness. I understand that. Letting somebody destroy me is not going to bring him back.
Well, just thought I'd let you know it was happening.
Yeah, good, thanks.
Marty leaves Dan's office and stops as he notices Diane, who is standing next to Dan's secretary in the doorway. Dan looks at her. She enters the office and glares at Marty as she passes him.
Diane, please, come in.
Dan takes her hand in his.
I'm very sorry. Please, have a seat.
Dan approaches his desk. Diane hesitates before moving closer.
I'm just finishing up some lunch. Alma got me a piece of the best cheesecake in the city. Want to have a little with me?
No, thank you.
It's pretty good.
I haven't been able to eat very much lately.
He nods gently and sits down at his desk to begin eating the cheesecake. Diane continues to stand across from him.
Diane, what you should know about David's death was that it was very sudden. We didn't see that rock until the last second. Then we were caught up in this amazing swirl of water.
Thanks. I guess it helps to know that.
They have a check for you?
Yeah. $5,055.72.
Well, that ought to help a little.
Yeah. I'm really grateful for that 72 cents.
He avoids her gaze and squirms in his seat.
Diana, I'm sure no one could miss David as much as his wife can.
That's right.
She glares at Dan and tears fill her eyes. She turns on her heels and leaves the office. Dan stares blankly at his forkful of cheesecake before finally taking a bite and staring into space. Jack sits at his desk. Light shines through the closed blinds into the dimly lit office. He gets up and walks to the other side of the room.
Dan, how are you?
Well, looking at that stuff you did on the bank, you got it.
Yeah, you like it?
I made one or two little changes, but you got it. Jesus, that's fine work.
Thank you.
You got right back on the horse, didn't you? Everybody else around here is in a coma. You've really risen to this.
Jack stares at him.
You took over on the river when I was in too much shock to even know what I was doing.
Jack continues to stare blankly and then averts his gaze to focus on his work. Dan hesitates.
I realize how much I rely on you. I don't rely on many people, you know. You comfortable in here? Get all that afternoon sun. Talk to Marty. You might as well take the corner office on the north side.
Oh, I couldn't take David's office, Dan.
No, take it. We gotta move on, kid. I need you to.
Dan slowly limps out of the office, and Jack watches him leave. Jack carries a box of supplies into his new office. He places the box on his desk and looks around. The office is bright, with a window that overlooks the department where his colleagues work. A large poster of a man golfing sits by the door. Jack approaches the other window that faces onto the street and stares out of it. The window overlooks a large pond surrounded by trees. He adjusts the Venetian blinds and the slats turn downwards, cloaking the office in darkness. He approaches his desk as Dan enters, limping slowly with his cane.
How is it? You like it?
Thank you.
Put some light in. It's dismal in here.
Dan opens the blinds. He walks to the desk and stands to look at Jack, who is avoiding eye contact.
It is hard, isn't it? For everybody. Jenna must be going through hell.
Yeah.
She must be out of her head. She wouldn't have brought that suit if she was thinking clearly.
Jack stares blankly at Dan.
Maybe you would have talked to her.
Well, what would I say?
Help her understand it isn't in her best interest. I don't have to tell you what to say.
I'd really feel uncomfortable talking to her about the suit.
The suit? No. She's going through a very difficult time. Be supportive.
Dan, I'm sorry. I can't do that.
You can't do that?
Maybe it is in her best interests.
Well, whatever you think is right. You know, I'm asking you to help her not do something that would waste her money with no chance of bringing him back. I'm not asking you to do anything disloyal to anybody. I'm asking you to be loyal.
They stare at one another.
Is there any reason you can't do that?
Dan moves to pat Jack on the shoulder. Jack watches as Dan leaves the office. Jack looks down, despondently. Later, his car pulls up outside Gina's house. A neighbor walks their dog down the large residential street. He looks at Gina's house from the driver's seat, where shrubs and small trees frame the front door. He exits the car. He stands at the door, under a brick archway, and waits for Gina to answer.
Hello, Jack.
Jenna, I'm so sorry.
Thank you for your letter. It was really thoughtful. Would you like to come in?
Well, I don't want to disturb you. I just...
Let's walk.
Sure. You know, I admired him tremendously. A wise person. Such a core of decency.
He was very funny. He used to do these imitations of me that really made me laugh. And I couldn't get mad at him. It's funny what you miss.
Here we were a few weeks ago, piling into that car. And now...
Jack, I have to ask you something. Don't suffer at me, okay? I can't carry your pain, too.
I'm sorry.
You're going to have to forgive yourself.
You're right.
You know, people have been coming to see me. Well, they have these really warm words about Nick and condolences for me, and then there'll be this little pause. And they tell me I have to put Nick's death behind me. And that I don't really have a chance. Is this one of those pauses?
No, I won't tell you that. You've been through enough.
Well, yeah, I have.
The pause was about something else. Suppose I testified. Your lawyers took my deposition. Maybe they'd like me to take the stand.
No, I don't think so.
Why not?
Because I think you really want me to say no, don't you?
Jack shakes his head.
This is the best yet. An actual offer of help.
She looks him up and down.
Sounded real good there, Jack. I'll tell you what. You got a pen? This is my lawyer's number. If you actually feel this way tomorrow, give him a call.
She hands him the piece of paper and walks away. Later, Jack continues to look at the piece of paper as he waits for Marty.
These things don't happen in a vacuum, Jack. As soon as you contacted them, they contacted us. They're obligated to.
So far, all I did was call them, Marty.
You realize that if we lose this suit, Dan will almost surely have to step down. Maybe leave the company. You understand that?
Marty, I'm just trying to figure out what's the right thing to do.
But the fact is, they don't even need you. They have an expert witness. Leslie Wayne Bechtel. And the guy wrote a book about river rafting. What can you possibly add to what he's going to say?
Jack stares vacantly at Marty before grabbing his suitcase and leaving.
You still have time to reconsider, Jack. Wish you'd think about it.
Marty follows him out of the office and they walk towards the lobby.
Good night, Marty.
Jack prepares to enter a busy elevator when he notices Dan standing inside. They stop and stare at one another for a long time before the elevator doors close on Dan's face. Jack is left standing in the lobby. Andy Thornell arrives at a bustling restaurant. Groups of people stand together, socializing. Andy makes his way through the crowd and joins Jack at a table.
I feel like I've got a few things I need to square with you, Jack.
Sure.
First of all, I'm very aware that when you put me into that boat, I had about another 3 minutes left on Earth.
Andy would have done the same thing for me.
Secondly, I'm sure it's no surprise we're moving our account.
No, it's no surprise at all. I'm glad you told me personally.
Okay, now I have to ask you something. It's been bugging me for a couple of weeks. How ashamed is anybody over there about what happened?
Everybody's taking it pretty hard.
You think taking it hard is good enough? Look, I know why we went on that trip together. You weren't positioning the client?
Sure we were. That wasn't the only thing the trip was about.
No? Did your company write any of it off as a business-related expense?
Dan handled that.
Well, maybe you should talk to the accountants. And maybe you can tell me that taking it pretty hard is good enough.
Look, Andy, we've been rocked by this. I'm thinking of testifying for Jenna.
thinking about it?
I don't know if I have anything worth getting up there and saying. I don't have any hard evidence that could clinch it for her. There's no point in an empty gesture.
There's something you could say that could possibly help her, then goddamn it, say it. These cases aren't decided by some crucial piece of evidence. Look, you don't have to go in with a smoking gun, all right? All you have to do is have the nerve to stand up when your turn comes and tell the goddamn truth the way you know it.
Andy, why are you beating me up about this?
Because I'm helpless. When I saw Tom Horton's body floating by me, his head looked like something inanimate, like a melon. He was already half dead. Not 30 seconds before, he was joking about how wet his socks were. Now, listen to me. Peggy Horton can't explain this to their 2-year-old because he can't talk. He doesn't know where his father went. He's never going to know where he went. So if you have anything you can do, anything, then do it. Do it.
Jack looks at Andy with wide eyes. In the courtroom, a lawyer questions the expert witness.
Mr. Bechtel, do you have any opinions concerning the conduct of Burroughs McCain, the defendant in this case?
Yes, I do.
And what are your opinions, sir?
Well, the first thing is that they should not have invited Mr. Karras along in the first place. He had no experience. In fact, he didn't even think he was coming along on a whitewater trip. He thought it was going to be a fishing trip. You do not take a novice on the Lava Canyon.
Well, when he asked me about this and told me that he'd always wanted to fish there, my comment was, so go.
Had there ever been any mention by Nick of that trip involving anything other than fishing?
No.
Did the words whitewater rafting ever come up?
No.
He certainly wanted to go on that trip. And he knew it was whitewater rafting. What else is it about Burroughs McCain's conduct that you believe was wrong in this case?
Well, it became apparent to me after reading the literature provided to me that Mr. Cutler put a lot of pressure on Mr. Miller to make this an exclusive trip. He didn't want any strangers on this trip, which made Mr. Miller run a single raft trip.
Well, now, shouldn't Miller have insisted that he go in two rafts?
Yes, he should have. In my classes, I talk about the need to be forceful and to sometimes say no, even though it might displease some people. If you're going to compromise safety, there's a time that you have to say no.
Jack watches alongside the spectators.
Now, ladies and gentlemen, the next witness will be presented to you by way of a videotaped deposition. For reasons of geography, the witness is unable to be here, but
I instruct you that you should consider the videotaped deposition in the same manner that you would consider any other testimony by a live witness.
The video begins to play.
Well, that morning, Ed said, why don't you better just go on down ahead. And we didn't discuss it then, but you know, later on, in later discussions with Ed, we talked about the idea of the single boats, and, you know, he kind of said that he felt a little pressure to keep it an exclusive trip.
When that order is given to Ed Miller and I had an agreement. And in order for us to put our compatible group together, there would be roughly 10 of us. And we wouldn't be mixed in with another group of strangers.
You're right. Sure.
I did not put pressure on him.
Jack looks around the courtroom and his gaze lands on Gina, who has turned to look at him. She stares at him and then looks away.
Mr. Wiederhorn, did you shortly after the accident make some notes to yourself on that trip?
A flashback of Peter sitting down at his desk and beginning to write.
I'm going to show you plaintiff's exhibit number 113.
The lawyer presents the note.
Would you read that, sir?
Peter reluctantly picks up the piece of paper.
What does it say?
Dan and Jack look on from the spectator's area, their gazes fixed on Peter.
No safety instructions.
Thank you, Mr. Wiederhorn. He gave us the instructions when we were gathered there, as he was checking the vests and before we pushed off. First time was before we put in, when he was getting everybody into the rafts. We were going out.
How long did that take?
I would guess no more than a couple of minutes.
The longer one occurred above Bidwell?
Yeah.
He told you, if you go in the water, get your feet in front of you. Is that right?
He said, when I say go to the high side, go to the high side fast.
That's going
to
help prevent the boat from flipping over.
Thank you.
The court stands in recess for 1 hour.
Jack enters the lobby, where crowds of people are passing through. Dan notices him from the other side. Dan stops to meet Jack's gaze, and they continue to walk slowly towards each other until they meet in the middle of the lobby. They stand in front of a seating area and look at each other. People continue to pass through, and a man sits near them reading a newspaper.
How are you bearing up on this?
Oh, okay. How are you doing?
Dan raises his eyebrows and shrugs.
Kind of enjoying it.
Come on.
Well, might as well. Another adventure, you know? Have a seat.
Dan motions for Jack to sit down, and they sit across from each other. Jack leans forward, his hands on his knees, avoiding Dan's gaze.
Today's the day, huh? You ready to testify?
Jack inhales and hesitates.
You know, when someone's in a position like this where anything you might say could hurt a friend, the only thing you can do is tell the truth.
Come on, of course. I guess I'm wondering how you'll color it.
Color it?
Color it. What'll it sound like? What flavor is it going to have?
Well, the truth doesn't have flavors. I'm just going to go in there and tell them what I saw and what I heard.
You can say the same thing in a lot of different ways, Jack. Well, you know that as well as I do. We do that for a living.
Well, this isn't a product we're selling. It's the truth.
Yeah? You self-righteous little prick. I fought for my life in that water, just like everybody else. You're telling me I abused these people? I suffered as much as anybody who made it. And I can't call back the ones who didn't. I'm not God, Jack, are you?
What were you doing, Dan?
What does that mean?
Taking everyone up there and organizing it so everyone ended up in one boat.
I was making better people out of it. Until we hit that rock, I gave them the greatest experience of their lives. I gave them their deepest selves. They found a bond that only comes to men who have bullets whistling over their heads. They could live with their wives for 50 years and never get that close.
Well, I guess that's the spin you put.
Yeah, that's right. That's the spin I put. Right.
Well, I think it's wrong. Maybe it's okay to color things and flavor them if you're selling cornflakes, but with people's lives, I think they're entitled to decide for themselves how much risk they'll be exposed to. I don't think it makes you a good leader to keep your people in the dark and drive them past their limits. I think it makes you a bully.
Well, see, I made you a better man, too.
Oh, wait, hold a second.
What? What? You want me to say I was a bad boy? I made a mistake? What?
If you have anything to say that I ought to hear, then tell me.
I'm not going to plead my case to you. Go in there and tell them what you saw. We hit a rock, Jack. We hit a rock. Now, let's talk about them for a minute. They were what? What, children? Six-year-olds who wouldn't cross the street without my permission? No, listen to me. Listen to me, goddammit. I know how rough that sounds, but this is the fucking truth. They weren't just grown men. They were executive officers of some of the biggest companies in this country. And they blindly did what I told them to do, and I killed them? That's sort of crap, Jack. They had every opportunity to get out of that boat. You know they did. I'm sick that those men are dead. I'll live with that for the rest of my life. But what about their part of this? What about their personal responsibility? What about yours?
Jack glares at him and nods.
That's a good question. What about my responsibility?
He continues glaring in the courtroom.
As I understand the objection, Ms. Chung,
Mr. Leslie Wayne Bechtel was not entitled to the right of expression of an opinion relative to his belief, re the professional conduct of Burroughs McCain as a professional cashier.
Jack watches as a lawyer pours a glass of water. She knocks the glass of water over. Jack has a flashback of the river. Water from the glass spills onto the floor. In the flashback, David is thrown from the raft. Others fall into the water. Jack's colleagues flail in the water, struggling to stay afloat.
Mr. Robbins, would you please take the witness stand?
Jack's attention comes back to the courtroom. Dan turns to look at him. Jack makes his way across the courtroom toward the witness stand as the spectators watch him intently. His eyes move between the crowd and the lawyers in front of him. He looks out towards the spectators for a final time before sitting down and meets Dan's eye again. Jack sits down on the witness stand with a microphone in front of him. Gina watches from the bench. Dan bows his head before looking away.
I couldn't hear everything they were saying. I didn't want to get too close and seem to be eavesdropping, but what I saw and what I heard was this. Miller had another group that he was planning to put with us. And Dan had said that he worked hard to put together people for this trip that could enjoy one another and relax. And he said, Ed, what's going on? What's going on?
All right, well, then...
It's difficult enough when you have a group, some of whom are coming together for the first time without having strangers.
We don't know, and our boat will. Is that clear? You understand what I'm saying?
Miller understood what he wanted.
Dan stares at him.
When we got to the first minor set of rapids, yes, sir, I was aware that the boat was acting differently. Because when it would go into a trough, it would take longer to come up.
And it didn't seem to have the same snap action that you were accustomed to seeing in a raft?
Yes, sir.
Is that because after you'd had time to think about it, you finally realized that it was because there was much more weight in this raft?
I didn't have to realize it. Miller addressed the group that had gone rafting the day before, and he said, if you'll notice, the raft is somewhat slower because there's more weight in it.
Dan continues to stare.
Thank you, Mr. Robbins.
Jack gets up from the witness stand. Gina watches and exhales. Jack makes his way back to the spectator's area, where his silhouette casts a shadow over Dan's face as he passes him. Dan avoids making eye contact and bows his head. A small recreation of the raft, with plastic figurines in it, sits on top of the lawyer's desk. The lawyer taps his fingers impatiently, and Gina stares into the distance as they wait for the jury. They sit up straight as they notice the jurors making their way back into the courtroom. The jurors each take their seats in the jurors' box, with the head juror clutching a piece of paper containing the verdict. Gina watches them intently, her eyes wide.
Have you arrived at your verdict?
We have, Your Honor.
Please hand it to the bailiff.
The bailiff hands the judge a piece of paper. He unfolds and examines it before reading it aloud. Dan looks on, despondently.
We, the jury, find for the plaintiffs and against the defendant, and further find the following.
Mm-hmm. The total amount awarded the Karras family was $2 million. No, listen. We don't pay the whole thing. Some of the negligence in the accident, 45% of it was attributed to the men themselves, so the award was brought down to $1.1 million.
Yeah.
Right, that's right. 45% them, 55% us.
Jack makes his way down the busy steps in front of the courthouse, where people pass hurriedly in all directions. Behind him, Dan slowly descends the steps and comes to stand in front of Jack. Jack looks Dan up and down.
Turns out the other guys were 45% responsible. I guess the truth isn't all that simple, is it?
Oh, so that makes it all right. You still don't get it, do you?
What exactly is there to get? I mean, besides the fact that you caused a lot of wreckage in there.
I don't consider a few dollars for Nick Karras' widow wreckage. I think our company can afford it.
Our company, huh? You think either one of us is going to stay very long at that company after that testimony you gave in there?
I guess I thought a few other things were more important.
Like what? Why did you do this? You could have got up and said what you had to say. You had to go that extra inch, didn't you? You gave it that St. Bernard sincerity, and you just tipped it against us. Why did you do that?
I don't know. I had this thought that maybe I should help someone who wasn't me. Wild, isn't it?
Dan glares at Jack as he turns to walk away. He shakes his head at Jack.
I'll see you, pal.
Jack watches him as he leaves. Dan stops and turns to look back at him, but Jack avoids his gaze and looks away. Dan stares and shuffles on his feet momentarily before nodding gently and turning to walk away. The courthouse steps continue to bustle with passersby as the sun shines down, palm trees casting shadows on the road. End credits. Cast: Dan Cutler, Alan Alda, Jack Robbins, Peter Gallagher, Nick Karras, Robert Legia, David Koenig, Bruce Altman, Gina Karras, Fionnuala Flanagan, Peter Weiderdorn, Jack Gilpin, Jerry Taggart, Ken Jenkins, Bill Spencer, Max Wright, Stephanie, Alice Barden, Andy Thornell, Dakin Matthews, Art Stefanoff, Don McManus, Tom Horton, Robert Picardo, Ed Miller, Eric Magnuson. This movie is a dramatization based on court transcripts and exhibits, contemporary news reports, interviews, and the historical record. Some scenes, events, and characters have been created for dramatic purposes. Copyright 1994 Home Box Office, a division of Time Warner Entertainment Company, LP. All rights reserved. First publication of this motion picture, sound recording and film, under British law, United States of America, 1994. Gone Awry, Inc. is the author of this motion picture under British law. In association with Viacom Productions, Inc., HBO, a Time Warner Entertainment Company. White Mile. Audio description by Vitac.